One of the best ways to do that, I got from my sponsor. He says, he just said, I'll be your temporary sponsor if you find somebody better. Boy, that gives them freedom. They could leave if they want to. Most of them, I stayed. I stayed after he told me to get a new sponsor. After he got sick and went to Kentucky, I wouldn't leave. Hell, I'll just call him on the phone. Small portion. I would have paid a lot more of that at the bar. And it turned out nice because he came all alone and he got sick and he couldn't go to AA meetings in a veteran hospital in a strange place. It was one of his great plans. His plan was, he was ill, and he thought the way to do this, he'd gotten his job, he'd been working for the post office for years, and so he was going to take his wife to Kentucky to live with her sister after he died. That was the idea. And she died before him. His brother-in-law helped him get into the veterans hospital, and that's where he died. And I called that line, and several other guys kept calling that line that he was sponsored to, and he could no longer drive, and he couldn't get out, and he couldn't get to meetings. And you might say we had our meetings on the phone, and we let him know our problem, how we're doing, guys. We're doing good, son. We're doing all right. One day I made that call, and didn't get no answer. Sad day for me. Sad day. In addition, these casual get-togethers have become customary to set apart one night a week for a meeting to be attended by anyone or everyone interested in a spiritual way of life. That is the foundation of open meetings. What is an open meeting? Well, I gave you a piece of paper from New York that tells you the difference between open and closed meetings. Sometimes we call them open meetings and we close them. It's just really funny. The basis of an open meeting, interested in a spiritual way of life. That was the only condition. It goes on to say, outsiders became interested. One man and his wife, T. Henry and Clarice Williams. They were Opera Group members. He was a multimillionaire. He was an engineer. He designed the tread on the tires, and every tire that went out of there, he got a piece of the action. A lot of money. Placed their large home in disposal of this strange assorted group. This couple has since become so fascinated that they dedicated their home to the work. Many a distracted wife has visited this house to find loving and understanding companionship among women who knew her problem and heard from the lips of their husband that what had happened to them. To be advised on how her own wayward mate might be hospitalized and approach the next he stumbled. A plan of action. I want to back up for a second and go back to 159 on the bottom. I'm going to give you a few names of some of those people that were there in those days, just for that. Phil Smith. Phil didn't make it. Paul N. He never got oxidized, they call it. Guy named Walter Bray. Walter Bray is the guy they talk in the 12 of 12, according to young Smith, who was duly addicted. And when they get him off the booze, he'd go down to the drugstore. In those days, you could buy bismuth paregoric, across, it has opium in it, and a lot of alcohol. And you could buy that directly across the counter without prescription. So he'd just slide over into that. Carol Grissom, Ed Andy. Ed Andy is supposed to be the oldest member in years in Alcoholics Anonymous. He got sober in the Oxford group and probably counts his sobriety time from that time. Junior said, if Ed Andy's sobriety date is what he says it is, he was sitting on the porch waiting for Bob and Bill to come home when they met. But he had forgotten that he was a member of the Oxford group and wasn't drinking there. Paul J. Stanley of the Stanley Brothers. A man named Joseph Doppler. He was a European. He was a furniture upholsterer. Robert Olivetti. These people all made it. J.D. Holmes. These people who have long forgotten were famous in their days. Famous alcoholics. And Harold Spencer. Famous people. So we've read that. And now we're on 160. I just thought I'd give those to you. Pretty interesting, that kind of stuff. Many a man yet days from his hospital experience has stepped over the thresholds of that home into freedom. Many an alcoholic who entered there came away with an answer. He succumbed to the gay crowd inside, whose laughter at their own misfortune understood his. Impressed by those who visited him at the hospital, he capitulated, means he surrendered entirely. When later in an upper room of this house, he heard the story of some man whose experience closely tallied with his own. They used to take him upstairs for the third step. And they used to stand around and kind of vote on whether he did it right or not. And they'd make him do it again, you know. The expression on the faces of these men, that infinitely something in their eyes of the men, the stimulating electric atmosphere of the place, conspired to let him know that there was a haven at last. The very practical approach to this, his problems, the absence of intolerance of any kind. That's a great line. I love you no matter what you do or what you say. I cannot practice intolerance. If you've got an inventory that looks like mine, there's no way that I can talk about you. The informality, the genuine democracy, the uncanny understanding which these people had were resisted. It was never intended in AA that any group would have power over another group. It was never intended in AA that any human being would have power over another human being. Yet we have people that want to do that. He and his wife would leave elated by the thought of what they had could now do for the stricken acquaintances and his family. They knew they had a host of new friends. It seemed that they had known these strangers always. They had seen miracles, and one was come to them. A lot of people say, wait for your miracle. Never, don't leave. Wait for your miracle to show up. They had visions of great reality. Visions of God. Great reality is God. Their loving and all-powerful Creator. Now this house has hardly accommodated its weekly visitors from the number of 60 to 80 as a rule. From surrounding towns, families driven long distance to be present. A community 30 miles away has 15 Fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous, Cleveland, Ohio. Being a large place, we think that someday its fellowship will number many hundreds. Mr. Clarence Snyder sponsored 100 people. Went to Florida eventually. But life among the Alcoholics Anonymous is more than attending gatherings and visiting hospitals, cleaning up old scrapes, helping to settle family differences to wives and to families, talking to them about the disease. Explaining the disinherited son to his irate parents, lending money, securing jobs for each other when justified. These are everyday occurrences. Every day. Every day. I keep a little pot. I don't have a lot of money, but I save a little bit, $200, that I can help a guy. Sometimes God helps me help him. I had a guy that needed a truck, and one of my old-timers that I sponsored, 35 years sober, said, I'm going to Arabia. I've got an old truck. I'd like to have about $100 for it. Do you know anybody that needs it? It's a good truck, he said. I said, do I? The guy we're just talking about it yesterday. That's how things come to me. These are everyday occurrences. No one, get this line, is too discredited or sunk too low to be welcomed cordially. And here's the condition if he means business. First tradition, we can ask a man to leave the meeting if he's interfering with the message. But we always say, keep coming back. Sometimes it takes more than one of us to put him out of the room.
Social distinctions, federal rivalries, and jealousies, these are laughed out of countenance. Being wrecked in the same vessel, step one. Being restored, step two. And united under one God, 3 through 9.
Now you can think about that line for a little while. I'm not going to go into it that deep. That's for you to decide. Under one God.
With hearts and minds attuned to the welfare of others, 10, 11, and 12.
Sneaky guy, isn't he?
The things which matter so much to some people no longer signify much to them. How could they? Under only slightly different conditions, the same thing is taking place in many eastern cities. In one, there's a well-known hospital called Towns for the treatment of alcoholics and drug addictions. 6 years ago, one of our members was a patient there, Bill Wilson. Many of us have felt for the first time the presence of the power of God within its walls, Dr. Silkworth. We're greatly indebted to the doctor in attendance there, for he, although it might prejudice his own work, has told us it's his belief in ours. That's pretty big for a scientific mind. Every few days, this doctor suggests our approach to one of his patients. Understanding our work, he can do this with an eye of selecting those who are willing and able to recover on a spiritual basis. Many of his former patients go there to help. Then in this eastern city, there are formal meetings such as we have described to you, where you may now see scores of members. There are the same fast friendships, there is the same helpfulness to one another as you find among our Western friends. There is a good bit of travel between East and West. We foresee a great increase in this helpful exchange, interchange. The conventions that were started in the early days had more of a purpose than for entertainment. People would come from east to west, north to south, to the conventions, and the coffee room, they would sit down, and they would talk to each other about their experiences and problems within their groups. And they would exchange information. Does that make sense to you? That's what he's talking about here. A lot of helpfulness in the interchange. You still see that sometimes. Not much today, but you still see it sometimes. Someday we hope that every alcoholic whose journey will find the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous at his destination. To some extent, this is already true. Some of us are salesmen and go about little clusters of two and threes and fives of us have sprung up in other communities. That's right. That's how we grew. The whole eastern seaboard was basically done by traveling salesmen. And they would call up to the New York office every day, and they'd say, is there anyone to call on in St. Louis? I'm going to be in St. Louis in the morning. And I will call them and make arrangements to meet with them. And they would sit down and talk about how they started meetings and talk about the spiritual program of life and that kind of stuff. Now, the AA in New York was a little different. They had gone fellowship. They thought more dancers would do it. And it didn't work out too well. Bill writes some letters about that, so they went back the other way. Dr. Bob was having twice as much success as Bill was. So he said, through contact with two larger centers, those of us, Akron in New York, those of us who travel and drop in as often as we can, this practice will enable us to lend a hand at the same time, avoiding certain alluring distractions of the road about which any traveling salesman can inform you. Cersei Whaley, who died here a couple of years ago, sober a long, long time, he had a meeting there annually once a year called the Gathering of the Eagles, and you were supposed to have 40 years to go to the meeting. He invited me to come, but I was unable. We were going to interview him, and he got sick and died. I wasn't supposed to do that. I had a lot of talks on the phone. Great guy. He said that from Dallas to Los Angeles, it was not a meeting of AA when he came in. And that in Texas, they would get in a car and drive 300 miles to support the start of a meeting. How important they felt it was. It's a long way. 2 hours, what does that be? About 6 hours there, 6 hours back, a couple of hours at the meeting. Thus we grow, and so can you. Though you be but one man with this book in your hand, what do you need? That's what I love about AA. What do you need here to do whatever you've got to do with people? One man, one woman with a book in your hand. That's all you need. The directions, conditions, and promises and the outlined experience of these people are already here for you. All you've got to do is follow it. And so many people think they can make it better. We believe it and hope it contains all you will need to begin.
We know what you're thinking. You're saying to yourself, I'm jittery and alone. I couldn't do that, but you can. You forget that you have just now tapped a source of power much greater than yourself. To duplicate with such backing what we have accomplished is only a matter of willingness, patience, and labor. How do you like that? That's all. Of course, we walk in today, and we walk into meetings that have been established. Some of them, I think someone said there was a meeting 65 years old around here somewhere. We walk into these meetings that are long established, the founders here, and we just take them as just like, well, that's the way it is, you know. I mean, isn't this nice? Here we are, this little meeting, you know. We know of an AA member who was living in a large community, and they had lived there for a few weeks when he found it that the place probably contained more alcoholics per square mile than any city in the country. His name was Clarence Snyder, we think. It was only a few days ago at this writing, 1939, the authorities were much concerned. He got in touch with a prominent psychiatrist who had undertaken certain responsibilities for the mental health of the community. His name was Dr. Howard Montclair. I'm going to give you some names now you're not going to find, just real easy. Dr. Howard Montclair. The doctor proved to be able and exceedingly anxious to adopt any workable method of handling the situation, so he inquired, what did our friend have on the ball? Our friend proceeded to tell him, and with such good effect that the doctor agreed to test among his patients and certain other alcoholics from a clinic which he attended. Arrangements were also made with the chief psychiatrist of a large public hospital. That guy's name was Dr. Russell Blaisdell. And it's the Greystone Rockwell Asylum. Now let me show you what a group conference used to look like before we had H&I and some other things. The group would decide within themselves what God would have that group do. They decided that what God would have them do was go into the insane asylum. And in order to do that, they had to see Dr. Russell Blaisdell. And so they sent some people in to see him. They prayed about it. They meditated about it together. I'm a great believer when you want to change something spiritually in this program, it takes two-thirds of worldwide vote, the basic text. But when you're making spiritual decisions in your group, you need to have prayer and meditation together. Don't run off home and come back and vote. Voting is fine. You want to know about coffee? What kind of coffee? Vote. You want to know what kind of candy we're eating? Vote. Don't take a group conference. Because it's not a group conference. It's a vote. You take group consciousness when you want something to happen spiritually in your meeting. Something too different. In this case, they took the group conference with prayer and meditation on their knees. And they asked God as a group what they should do. And they went into Rockwell. And I'm telling you what happened. Still others from the stream of misery which flowed through that institution. I don't know if you've ever been locked up in a mental institution and you're hopeless and you just can't seem to get help, and every time you get a start, you fall down and they got you in there and you mixed in with other people, they have other kind of problems, and it's horrible. And here comes some guy from AA, you know, that they allowed to come into the hospital. San Quentin was the first place, Warden Duffy was the first place to let us in prison. There's a guy who's been I have a guy that is a non-alcoholic who speaks around at AA things, who's the head of all the California institutions, lockup, jails, prison. He said AA frees more people from prison than anything else they have. And the recidivism rate for those that have a program is very low. And they got it all over there. So our fellow workers will soon have friends galore. Some of them may sink and perhaps never get up. That's part of the struggle here. There's nothing sadder than to lose one. I shed tears over them all the time. He said, but if our experience is a criteria, more than half of those approached will become fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. More than half. What an increase, 50%.
With a few men in the cities have found that ourselves, we have discovered the joy of helping others to face life again. That is a joy. I'd love to see that happen. I'd love to see families restored. I'd love to see children come to my house and laugh and giggle. I'd love to see children hug my leg and they call me Grandpa Brown. All they know about me is what their daddy and mama have said. We used to throw big parties at the house when we were younger. We were getting little, I guess I don't know what it was. Well, we had a lot of problems. But there will be no stopping till everyone in that town has the opportunity to recover if he can and will. Still, you may say, but I will not have the benefit of the contact with you who have written this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon Him. I don't care what New York says. My reliance is upon the past. I certainly listen to them and do all the things you're supposed to. I write them letters now and then. I call them, they call back. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave, God. Relationship with God. That's my fellowship I crave. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. Promises. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Condition and a direction. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come. Here's your condition. If your own house is in order, I got to be spiritually fixed. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. Franklin Williams, an old timer, used to say, you can't transmit something you haven't got no more than you can come back for who you haven't been. Now, you have to be a Southerner to understand that. See to it that your relationship with Him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is your promises now. My relationship, keep in fit spiritual condition and see what happens. This is the great fact for us. This is a fact. Abandon yourself to God, steps 1, 2, and 3. As you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Clear away the wreckage of your past, 8 and 9. Give freely of what you find and join us, 10, 11, and 12. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge. The word trudge is to walk with purpose. Towards God, what they're talking about. The road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Mr. Wilson leaves you exactly where he found you, in need of a spiritual experience by the working of the steps. God bless you and thank you for having me, sir.
I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic. A couple of things that came up earlier in some discussions we had at dinner last night. And I had some quotes from Bill. There's a great book that you can get, which is conference approved. But it's The Language of the Heart, which is a collection of articles that Bill Wilson wrote in the Grapevine. And historically, the Grapevine, when they started it, was to provide the forum for the communication to all the membership. But probably primarily it was started to give Bill Wilson a forum at which he could write the articles that he wanted to write as he was developing the traditions and everything else. But it's a very great book. And it shows the development over the years of Bill Wilson's philosophy between the time, or his interpretation between the time of the big book up until the publishing in the 12x12, and then after the 12x12. I just had a couple of excerpts from that I thought were appropriate because we had some questions. Somebody talked about rules. I had a couple of people, you know, talk about it. Well, we got these groups and we got the rules. And sometimes we get caught up in rules in AA, which is not the case. There's a difference between directions. You know, I want to follow the directions that are in the book, the directions and the guidance that have been given to me. And so Bill wrote about rules in September of 1945 in the Grapevine. And an excerpt from that says, "The individual in AA is under no human coercion, is at almost perfect personal liberty. The 12 steps of our AA program are not crammed down anybody's throat. They are not sustained by any human authority. Yet we powerfully unite around them because the truth they contain has saved our lives, has opened the door to a new world. Our experience tells us these universal truths work. The anarchy of the individual yields to their persuasion. He sobers up and is led, little by little, to complete agreement with our simple fundamentals. Ultimately, these truths govern his life, and he comes to live under their authority, the most powerful authority known, the authority of his full consent, willfully given. He is ruled not by people, but by principles, by truth, and, as most of us would say, by God." He also talked about emotional sobriety, and we're talking about it in January 1958. He said, "Suddenly I realized what the matter was. My basic flaw had always been dependence, almost absolute dependence on people and circumstances to supply me with prestige, security, and the like. Failing to get these things according to my perfectionist dreams and specifications, I had fought for them. And when defeat came, so did my depression. There wasn't a chance of making the outgoing love of St. Francis a workable and joyous way of life until these fatal and almost absolute dependencies were cut away. I found I had to exert every ounce of will and action to cut off these faulty emotional dependencies upon people, upon AA, indeed upon any set of circumstances whatsoever. Then only could I be free to love as Francis had. Emotional and instinctual satisfactions I saw were really the extra dividends of having love, offering love, and expressing a love appropriate to each relation of life. Plainly, I could not avail myself of God's love until I was able to offer it back to Him by loving others, as He would have me. And I couldn't possibly do that so long as I was victimized by false dependencies. For my dependencies meant demand, a demand for the possession and control of the people and conditions surrounding me." Hope that answers a couple of questions. And Don, sir. Questions?
Do you have questions, Eric?
Nobody had any questions yet.
Can we go home? If I know, I'll tell you. If I don't know, I'll tell you. Ditto said he had... I said, "Ditto, they're not going to have any questions. They got it all, you know." And he said, "Oh, no, got a lot of questions."
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
What are the names?
Hey, this is even on. There you go. Are you kidding? What are the names of the people in the stories in the back of the third edition, their sobriety dates, and what group are they from?
Well, the original stories, as they wrote the book and they got the people to write them, the ones in Akron were edited by a man who got sober. It's called, he's a painter and anyway, a newspaper guy. They picked him up out of the Salvation Army. And I'm filing back here. Let's start with Dr. Bob. On the page 171, now this you may have to change in your fourth edition because this is a third edition book. Fourth edition people, that the changes that have been made, I can tell you a little bit. If you want to see what Young Smith's signature looks like, I've got that. I'm a groupie, you know what I mean? Robert Holbrook Smith, M.D. He's from Akron, Ohio. His date of sobriety is 6/10/35. It could be June 17th of 35. There's some discussion about that, but I don't think that a few days is one way or the other. He was 3 years and 10 months as of the first edition sober. He died November 16th, 1950. He was 71 years old. He got sober at age 56. He probably helped more people. He spoke 5 languages, including hand signing, German, Greek, Latin, English. He was a... he's an only child, and his father and mother of Judge and Mrs. Walter Barron, B-E-R-R-I-N, Smith, was his father and mother. He met Ann Ripley from Oak Park, Illinois, and June 2nd, 1949 is when she died. She's a Wesley College graduate, and they were married 17 years after they met. They were a little slow about joining this thing. She was from a railroad family. Her daddy was a timekeeper for the railroad. I guess a mid-management position, you might call it. She had an uncle who was the president of one of the railroads and used to take her around with him. 3 of her brothers made a who's who of America. They were unable to sell. His story mostly is in the Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. And he tried to make amends to those folks, and it never did work. And there was some kind of an argument over the care of her mother that Ann got into with her brothers. And Dr. Bob talks about he tried to make amends, but it never healed. Through that connection, Dr. Bob had a contract out of Akron, or if the train had a wreck, he was to come to the wreck. They paid him a fee to keep him on retainer. He was born in 1879, in August the 8th of 1879, at St. Johnsbury, Vermont, which is about 100 miles north of East Dorsetville. He was raised and born. So these two guys, it's kind of odd stuff, and just about 100 miles away. So, they renamed the title. It was called The Doctor's Nightmare, and they renamed it to what it is today. It was called Dr. Bob's Nightmare, and then they changed it to Doctor's Nightmare. I don't see what the great deal in changing that. He was a member of the Board of Trustees from 11/38 to 10/49. So, this guy was he was also a world champion bridge player. He was a hunter. He loved to hunt and live off the land. It was his living proof that you were a man, that you could go out and make your own way, just eating varmints or fish or whatever, you know. He also played horseshoes very, very well. In fact, he did a lot of things very well. He could be a pretty competitive guy. Next guy is Bill Dotson on page 182. Bill is from Akron. His date of sobriety is June 26th of 1935. He was 20 years, 1 month as of the second edition, first printing. That's when his first story shows up. He didn't write his own story. Bill Wilson wrote it out of a collection of tapes that he had made over speaking engagements. So he spoke around quite a bit. He's not too hard to get. Most of these people, I have the CDs of them or tapes that have come my way up. It's kind of interesting to hear the people in the book. He died September 17th, 1954. He served on the City Council of Akron. He did not drive. I told you that earlier. He was kind of an interesting guy. He was a delegate from Ohio in 1951. And served on GSC Panel 1. I won't try to tell you what that is, but it's a way of describing the panels. So he stayed sober. Most of the people that we're going to deal with stayed sober because they took them out of the book if they drank on some occasions. Had to be shown, page 193. This guy, is a brother. His name is Dick Stanley. And he's from Akron, Ohio, and his sobriety date is 2 of 37. It was called, his dad was an alcoholic. His brother Paul comes into the program. Paul Stanley is a car salesman. Brother Dick goes on to political office. He talks about there were only seven or eight before him in Akron, in his story. He was on the board of trust 4 of 46 to 1 of 53. It's not in the original manuscript. His story was called The Car Smasher in the first edition, first printing. His brother Paul's was brother. His brother was Truth Freed Me, was his story. And he was the guy who introduced seances into Bill and Bob and their wives' lives. They had some seances going on for a little while. They didn't try it. Ruth Hawks talks about it. Said nothing ever happened when she was there, but they were always talking about should have been here last week. Dick's death came in 11 of 57. Somebody asked me the other day if they were all dead. A couple of them I wouldn't know about. Most of them are. Yeah, I knew more than what you thought I did, didn't you? Let me get over here. He thought he could drink like a gentleman. On page 210 of the third edition. His name is Abby Albert Gorlick. They call him Abby, the Catholic, from Cleveland. I have a picture of him and the first Cleveland meeting with Bill Wilson there, and Clarence Snyder was taking the picture. There's quite a story around that. When Clarence, the Catholic Church, because the Oxford groups were a Protestant organization that had a confessional type of a process, at least as far as the Catholics were concerned, the Catholics from Cleveland were going to excommunicate the Catholics if they continued into the going down there. There's a great book about Clarence's life, and he ended up with God's will by having two brand new cars in a depression time when nobody had a car. And he'd load these guys up and take them down there. And so he and Dr. Bob had their first argument. It's okay to argue with your sponsor. I probably lit a whole fire here now, but that's, you know, he argued with him, and Dr. Bob said, well, there's nothing we can do about it. They'll just have to, you know, and he said, oh, yes, we can. We'll start a meeting there, and we're going to divorce the Oxford groups, and we're going to call ourselves AA, taking that the title of this book. And so he claimed to be the founder of AA, but you got to read carefully what he says. He started the first meeting that was called AA. That was his claim to fame. Now, a lot of old-timers would disagree with that, and they said, oh, we had AA meetings. Lois said, we had AA meetings in our house. They just weren't called AA at the time. So this guy says he thought he could drink like a gentleman. His sobriety date is 4/39. He's from Cleveland. He was 16 years and 3 months as of the second edition. He had the first meeting in his home. He was a lawyer. They were losing the house, but they managed to hang on to it. He started the principles of rotation. You know how we rotate out of the place? He's the guy that founded that, and they got the next secretary after a while, and that became the model. A lot of things in AA just show up. How it works showed up from the mother group, and the earliest people in Southern California, when somebody said to a guy, how do we start a meeting? And he said, well, let's read page 58 of this book, how it works, and that's how it works started. It's nothing from on high that came to us. It just spread throughout the country. So, Abby stays sober. He's a patent attorney, if that helps any. D Joe Doppler, the guy we talked about earlier, was his sponsor. His story was a European drinker later on, according to Bob Smith Jr. Women Suffer Too on page 222. Marty Mann. There's a lot known about Marty Mann. He wrote a book about it. A people named the Browns wrote a book about it. Great book. Ought to get it. Great book. Great story. Marty died in 722 of 80. She, in a way, she started the National Council on Alcoholism. The story really goes that the Yale studies of alcoholism, the summer studies run by a guy named Jelinek, Ruth Fox, I think the guy's name was Hazard, he's a Irish doctor, and then they used all the summer students who were there to do a worldwide investigation into alcoholism, and Jelinek became the number one authority on alcoholism of his day. Many of the early alcoholics of that day, such as Cersei Whaley and a few others, got to go to that school to get their education. Marty Mann was raised in wealth. Her daddy was the wholesale director of Marshall Fields, a huge department store of its day. I guess it's still there. And he had quite a bit of money, and about $3.5 million, and he had a falling out. He drank a little and chased women a little and gambled a little. That's an understatement. But he had some money. When she's 14 years old, she contracted TB, and they brought her down here to Pasadena, California. And there was a stream of air that ran through there that equaled Colorado. Her family was so wealthy, they just moved the whole family out here to be near her and just rented a mansion. And they lived in the area of the town that was very wealthy. Her mother's family had shipping and furs, and there was a trust set up. And the father leaves, has an argument. There's four children, herself, her sister. They were both lesbians. And there was a set of twins, a boy and a girl. And the girl will marry one of the guys that's at Tebow's place in Blythewood eventually. He will stay sober. He's a college-educated young man. He works on, he fixed old father. I can get into a lot of this stuff and we'll never go home. Anyway, she wrote three books, one of them twice. They called it three books, but really she wrote one twice, The Primer on Alcoholism. They were looking for someone to carry the message, and they chose her because of her education and deportment and clothing. She was raised, she never went to public school in her life. She was always run into Mrs. Nick's something back in Italy, or she was in Florida. What's the wealthy people? By the time Dad got done investing, gambling, drinking, and girls, $3.5 million got gone, and investments. He loved gold mines and silver mines. And I think anybody could probably got him when he's drunk to invest in some. And so he lost all his money and he abandoned the family. And then he comes back and talks the mother into breaking the trust, which was enough money to take care of them in pretty good shape. She does that. And he bleeds that dry and breaks it. And dies, he dies broke. Her dad's name was William Henry Mann. Her mother's name was Margaret Deming. She was married once to a guy named Robert Curtis Christie, the hardest drinking man in New Orleans. She met him at a party. Dr. Foster, by the time it's all over, she goes to Europe. She becomes an interior decorator. She kind of hangs out there for a while. She has many, many problems. She eventually passed out at a 4th of July party with a bunch of Americans. They took her up and put her to bed. Wrong place for a drunk. Always leave them on the floor. And falls off a balcony and breaks her jaw and just makes a mess of herself. And a lady takes her into Scotland, a nurse, and keeps her out in the place away from the booze, and she heals. By the time she gets back to America, she is just a mess. There isn't any money. She's now a welfare case. And she is sent to a guy by the name of Foster Kennedy, who is a part of our history. And he is a psychiatrist who has a ward for sick people at Bellevue Hospital, and she's there for 6 months. He gets her transferred out to Blythewood, and she's out there 15 months. And during that time, she will not just stay sober, she'll be in and out stuff. And eventually, they get a book. They had made 400 loose leaf manuscripts of the, it was really a sales tool for the new book that was coming out. And Dr. Silk Thibault got one and gave it to her. And they had a struggle with it because every time she saw God, she got mad. She'd throw it out the window and they'd make her go get it, you know. But eventually she will get sober. And she's put on a train and sent to New York. Grinney was the guy, the other guy, her friend there that she made that married her sister. She was sent to a train and they put her on and picked her up at the other end. A guy named Popsy Mayer met her there. It's kind of interesting. And took her to her first meeting at the Wilson House. And there wasn't any other women, and she went upstairs and cried, and Lois had to sit with her to get her to come back downstairs. But once she did, she came back, and she loudly announced to Grinney that they were not alone anymore. There were people like them. And that was so important to her to identify that there were people like them. She will stay sober for 20 years. She will drink again at the end of 20 years. And then she begins to take, like a lot of old-timers used to keep, when they brought in, Ruth Fox was the one who brought in the, what's the drug that makes you puke? Antabuse. She brought Antabuse in. And so she was making out prescriptions to her for Antabuse. And she's fighting it. As she grows quite older, Bob Pearson, it's so much fun to know these people a little bit. In the 1970s, when they had the convention in New Orleans, I think that's what it was, he went and found her. She would kind of dropped out of sight. And he went and found her and talked her into coming, she's very sick, and talked her to coming down and being a featured speaker at the International Convention. She had done so much good that it was just impossible to believe. And people did not hold it against her that she drank. They gave her a standing ovation. And she drank. She died a few weeks later, which is kind of like Bob said, I gave her her last hurrah, you know. And it's pretty interesting stuff. I have one other story that's interesting. A man named Brinkley Smithers, at 5 years of the National Council, the Yale people said, we're not going to fund this any longer. You've got to find a way to fund yourself. A guy named Yet Gardner, who was a recovered alcoholic and never drank again, was making a 12-step call in a hospital. And he gets to the hospital, and the guy in the bed was named Brinkley Smithers. He had no idea who Brinkley Smithers is, and when you go on a 12-step call, you don't know who you're talking to. If you're down on Skid Row talking, you don't know who you're talking to. A lot of people on Skid Row, they didn't start there. And he's telling this guy Smithers, whose eyes are all bloodshot and swollen closed, and he's all swollen up, and he'd been hospitalized 50 times. And so he's laying there detoxing, and this guy, Yet Gardner, just does what we do. He told him his story. At the end, he said, you know, I worked with this wonderful woman, Marty Mann, who is turning the country around and speaks all over the world on alcoholism as a disease, and they think it'll take 50 years. And they're going to close this down because Yale has withdrawn its support. And the guy looked, you know, I guess as good as you can look, and he said, I'll support it. I'll fund it. Now, can you imagine making a 12-step call, you and I, and we're talking to some nut in a bed? And we're telling him we need a lot of money. And he's going, I'll take care of it. We'll come back tomorrow when you're feeling better. I don't think you got the question. You know? Well, Brinkley Smithers' father was the founder, co-founder of IBM. He was born with a platinum spoon in his mouth. Somewhere in the, I don't remember now, either 500,000 or 250,000 shares of IBM the day he was born. He had so much money that his cousin, who was a CPA, did nothing to keep up with his money for him. So he meant it when he said, and did, he funded that place and kept it alive. He also built the Smithers Institute, fully funded forever, a 28-day treatment program. He had an argument, he hired Ruth Hawks. He wanted only rich people to come there like himself, and he was going to charge them a lot of money. And she wanted anybody to come, and she quit him, but it's still there to this day. And his dad was very active in all of this. I don't know why I like all this stuff. Attibus came to this country in 1946. I bet you got all that written down, haven't you? You probably figured out by the tapes and you don't have to worry about it. This is number 230. Joe Doppler is his name, the European drinker. He may have been the first Roman Catholic to ever join AA. His date of sobriety is 3 of 36. He's really getting back there, isn't he? He was a furniture upholsterer. He's one of the first six in Akron. He was 3 years and no months as the printing of the first edition, first printing. Joe Doppler. He still spoke in that European stuff. The Vicious Cycle, 238. California's own. Jimmy Burwell. He got sober in 616 to 38, and he died in 98 of 74 from a freak accident. He'd been in the military, and he fell down and hurt himself somewhere or another, ended up dying at the big hospital down in San Diego. I told you that he's Ed in the 12 of 12. Yes, sir. The sobriety date was 9-8 of 74. No, I'm sorry. That's not true. Can't be true. Sobriety date is 6-16 of 38. Burwell. B-U-R-W-E-L-L. Now, he helped start AA in Baltimore and in Philadelphia. He was the guy who stood for the third, who just fought him to the death that it be God as you understand him. They were anti this guy. They, in those days, that when you read his story in the 12 of 12, when he sells the products that he's supposed to be selling to get money for booze, and in those days they'd give you a dime, and you could make your call on a dime, and they'd accept the charges, and they would come anywhere to get you. Hundreds of miles, if that's what it took. They would go and get you and bring you back. When he put his dime in and made his call, nobody would come. They just couldn't stand it because he forever was blasting God. In that days, when you had a one-year birthday, you were automatically the speaker. He got up and gave a great talk about the fellowship and then let God have it. They thought it was just going to be okay. Oh, they hated that guy. But eventually he comes back and makes a great member. And that contribution, you never know here what's going to happen. So don't try to judge things. That contribution led us into all of the world. God as you understand it. So when they took it to the Buddhists and they had them take a look at it, they said, change God to good and there's nothing there we can disagree with. Isn't that something? I mean, that's a mirror. How do you do that? You know, it fits in everywhere. He had, you can read about him in the May 1968. I'm not going to go too far in. He had some brothers. They died from drinking. He married Rosa. They stayed sober together. First, he says, I will never 12-step another woman. And Rosa said, you sure won't. He ends up coming to San Diego, California, works in the insurance business, and takes care of buildings, real estate kind of deal. And so Bill's mother moves out here with her husband, the second husband, the doctor, and they have a practice, and she makes a ton of money in real estate, and goes off to Europe to study, to be a psychiatrist, comes back, and she just invests and makes, and he takes care of her real estate for her. They know each other. A lot of stories about this guy. He has a history of AA. I have it on CD. I like I View People. Anything I say is something I've read, you know. The things they say, they were there, you know what I mean? So I like that I View People. The next guy is called the News Hawk. And he's the guy who helped to edit the stories in Akron. And the story started out as traveler, editor, scholar, and it eventually became the News Hawk. And he's born in Australia. He's Dr. Bob Sponsoree. And he got sober 7 of 37. And he stayed that way. He also helped in Washington, D.C. to get things started. Jim Scott was his name. There's two Scotts. There's Jim Scott, this guy, and there's Dr. Jim Scott, who is black and will take it to the black community. From farm to city is the next little story we have here. On page 261 of the third edition, her name is Ethel Macy. She got sober 5 of 41 in Akron. She is the first woman sober in Akron. Her husband Russell joined at the same time. They were a husband and wife then. She died April of 9th of 1963, and I believe she stayed sober. I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure she did. Somebody said she weighed 300 pounds. Said Russell was a little bitty guy. They're fun, though. They came in together. I think that chocolate. Yeah, listen to that over here. Chocolate. The man who mastered fear, Archie Towbridge. Archie Towbridge will come and live with Dr. Bob, and he will start AA in Detroit. His hometown was Grosse Pointe, Michigan. He was called the fearful one the first time around, and they changed the story to the man who mastered fear. He's Dr. Bob Sponsoree. He has a non-alcoholic friend by the name of Sarah Klein. Sarah Klein was a social worker in Detroit who had great interest in what they were doing, and for your information, was the first secretary of the AA meeting there, a non-alcoholic. They called her the Angel of Detroit. She was quite a woman. He lived with Dr. Bob for 10 months. It took him 6 months to form a group. He spoke 3 languages. He lived in 4 countries for years. He was college a couple of years. Man of master fear. He's very ill for a long, long time. And Sarah Klein kind of took over for him and kind of took care of him. Ooh, let me go back. I'm sorry. Day of sobriety, September the 11th, 1938. And Bob Smith Jr. remembered this guy real well because he lived with him for 10 months. 287, he sold himself short. Earl Treat, another founder. Started AA in Chicago. Earl Treat. His date of sobriety is 7 to 37. He wasn't doing a whole lot of good for a while, and a lady named Sylvia Kaufman, who had gotten sober with Clarence Snyder, had taken the steps with him. She got sober 6 to 39, and she's a wealthy widow, and she showed up there, a wealthy divorcee. She showed up there, and him and her together put it together. He died 10 of 62. He lived quite a while. Some of the early members, he was a board of trust from 51 and 55. He's also the guy who says to Bill, the points should be traditions. Bill was writing the 12 points to assure our future. And this guy suggested traditions might be a better word. They give him credit for it anyway. Okay. The next guy is a tremendous guy with problems. Him and Bill had a lot of problems, or at least he had problems. I don't think Bill paid much attention to him. Clarence Snyder, the home brewmaster. He talks about a 93% rate of recovery in Cleveland, and I believe him. Well, the hardest, there was a touring group after he died that went around the country doing things like Joe and Charlie, that went around the country doing these things. So he met Dr. Bob February the 8th. He died, he will stay sober. Date of sobriety is February the 11th of 1938. And he will die in 1984 in Florida. He moved to Castleberry, Florida. One of my sponsorees moved near to Castleberry and said, I can't find a sponsor down here. I said, how far is Castleberry? He said, 20 miles. I said, that's the home of Clarence Snyder. I guarantee you can find a sponsor. Had a wife named Grace. His first wife was named Dorothy. He, first group to call itself AA. That's what his claim to fame was, he thought. He's born December the 26th of 1902. He had a son by Dorothy. And then he had his wealth. He was married to a woman named Selma and got divorced, St. Petersburg. Then he married Grace and he wrote a book about it. He joined the Assembly of God Church. He was famous for holding Christian retreats. And he thought that AA had abandoned the principles of the Oxford group. Because that's much of what he did. He's buried in Cameron Cemetery in Cameron, North Carolina with Grace, and they called her the Amazing Grace. They wrote a book about it. Lots and lots of service work. He was arguing the biggest file of complaints in New York is from Clarence Snyder writing letters about Bill Wilson. Sylvia Kaufman, page 304. Her date of sobriety is 6 of 39. Clarence Snyder was the sponsor, and she helped start AA with Earl Treat in Chicago. He turned up 6 of 39. Well, I think we go to part 2 now. He stopped in time. This first guy, 317, we don't know who he is. We know some things about him. He's a Vietnam vet, but we don't know a lot about him. We also believe his parents are in the program. I just love finding these people sometimes. There are a few of them out there. This next guy is Fear of Fears, and his name is Cecil Mansfield. His date of sobriety was 7-4 of 1949. Now that is a woman. Her husband George joined at the same time. Isn't that interesting when people do that? Next guy is on 327. His name is Cecil Carlisle. And he was 75 years old when he came in. His nickname was Peace. He was a representative of stars in Hollywood. That's what he did for a living. He died June the 26th of 1992. Those golden years. Didn't I give that to you? I'm sorry. 12 of 70. 12 months of 70. This next one, 335, we don't know anything about her. She's unknown. If you find anybody, let me know. I want to add them to the collection. We don't know too much about the guy on 342 who's the guy from India where just the literature, he got sober on just the literature. Yeah. Okay. Well, the last one is 335. It's called The Housewife Who Drank at Home. She's unknown. Want me to go back a little further? Is that all right? You caught it? Okay. I'm sorry. I just The next word thing is life-saving words, and he's unknown. But he got the big deal here is he got sober on the literature without any meeting, which kind of shows that the literature works, I guess. You can feel that. This next guy, I had the privilege of going to meetings with him for a number of years. His name is Earl Marsh, and he's a physician here yourself. I can tell you his sponsor was Frank Brennan, a very famous alcoholic from the San Francisco Bay Area. Sober over 50 years when he died. He knew Lois and Bill. I tried to interview him in his 90s, but he was gone a little bit. He was a heck of a guy, though. He was a nice man. He's from Walnut Creek, California. He was a psychiatrist and a surgeon. Actually, he dealt more with delivering babies, is what he really was did. His date of sobriety was 6/15 of 1953. He is mentioned in some of what we call the approved books, Earl Marsh. Just died here lately. I don't have a death date, but I went to the funeral, but I didn't get the date. Nice guy. The next one is called Lisa. We don't know much about her. We don't know much about her. Teenager's decision, absolutely. She may or may not be alive. She's been deleted from the book, the fourth edition. The next guy's on 356. His name is Pete Wasser, and he got sober in June of 1945. And the story is Rum, Radio, and Rebellion. Wasser, W-A-S-S-E-R. His story was updated in 1945 in the Grapevine in 1969. Updated story in the Grapevine in 1969. He's born in Cleveland, Ohio. Or maybe Tennessee. Not too sure about that one. I got maybe Tennessee there, so... But he got sober in Cleveland. And I've got him on CD. Any day was worst day. We don't know much about him. He was a husband and a wife. The husband's the alcoholic. Both parents are probably alcoholic. But by reading the story, you get that. 7/5/73. This man's name was Chet Rood. He's a banker out of New York, out of Los Angeles. It might have been worse as a story. He's mentioned by Cliff Walker in the history of AA. He helped set up the books for the original office that was run by Sybil Corn, central office in Southern California. He also set up the books for the business office in New York. He did not make it. Good guy, though. A flower of the South, great lady. Her name is Esther Elizar. E-L-I-Z-A-R-D-I. E-L-I-Z-A-R-D-I. She got sober on the 5th month, 16th day of 1941. She was the founder of the program in Dallas, Texas. She died June the 3rd of 1960. She was a very active, recovering woman alcoholic. She was married to a man. She also helped in Houston, Texas, too. She was married to a guy from Louisiana, and they had a lot of oil. At least he did, what she benefited from. But she was, I have a picture of her. She was just a tireless, tireless worker. Calculating the cost on 396, do not know who he is. There's about 6 stories, they don't know who any of them are. Stars Don't Fall is the next one on 400. Her name is Felicia Gresnick. That's her real name. quite a story around her. Barty Mann was her sponsor. She will never drink again. She is the daughter. She had mood swings and took niacin and clinical depression, and she's an neurotic. And her mother was a lady with lots of money who ran a newspaper, and her cousin owned the name of Magruder owned the New York Times. They were pretty high in society, and they had a ton of money. Her mother decided that she had all that this world could give, and so she wanted a title. So she married a count. We think from Austria. And she ended up, this guy turned out not to be as nice as he seemed to be, and was violent. And so she brought her baby and came home. He sent his henchmen after them and stole the baby and took it back. Now, I'll talk about a little horsepower. She died when she's 92 years old. In February of 99, she's 55 years old. The reason I know a lot about her is because when they were writing the life story of Marty Mann, the Browns, who I interviewed, if you can't get it firsthand yourself, get it from somebody that has it, they had found her in Denver, Colorado, in a rest home. She had two grandsons there. One's a famous painter. And they were very kind to them, and they called and told them what they wanted. They were just so excited, flew out there, and they said, well, we don't know if Grandma will keep it together anymore. And she couldn't. But in the, they were so downhearted, they thought they'd found a real key to the whole thing. These people had enough horsepower to go to Franklin Delano Roosevelt and have him use the United States government to get that kid back. Through diplomatic means. That's horsepower.